Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 15th of August, the 33rd. Can you believe it's been that many? Irish Fest starts pretty soon on the Summerfest grounds in downtown Milwaukee, one of the largest Irish music festivals in the whole wide world. That's the music from Gwicha. They were with us on a program we did on Irish Fest some 2 years ago. They're a five-piece traditional band. They are students no longer, but they met as students, music students at the famed University of Limerick. There are several members who have earned all Ireland titles. The band takes modern rhythms and traditional melodies and puts them together in a very unique style. They are going to be performing at Irish Fest. Actually, some of the members are teaching at the Irish Fest School, which is going on right now. And they're going to be performing on Friday at 7 o'clock at Miller Light Stage. They will be Saturday at Miller Light Stage at 3:15 in the afternoon and Sunday, 5:45, also on the Miller Light Stage. Let me introduce members of this wonderful group. I could just let them play all hour, but we want to hear about their music and their travels to the United States and get an update. They were, as I said, with us on this program. We've done traditional Irish Fest shows for some 20 years now, so it's our great pleasure. I just think they're terrific. They're really a good group. Let's start with Anya Magrini, who was playing fiddle here, graduated with a bachelor's in Irish music and also dance. She has a lovely voice. She was playing fiddle for us now. She sings in both English and Irish language, and her voice has been described as having an attractive innocence. So you sing and you also dance.
Well, I wouldn't say too much of the dancing.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
No, not really, no. But the singing, yes.
And you will sing for us later?
Yeah, I'll sing. Yeah.
And so you all met each other at the University of Limerick. There's a famous school there.
Yeah, the University of Limerick, they have the Irish World Academy of Irish Music, and it's the only place in the world that you can go and study a degree in Irish music. So we were very fortunate to meet each other, and we all ended up in the same class as well. So.
Oh, did you really? You were all in the same class, and you got together. And you've been coming to Irish Fest. You were with us a couple of years ago. How many years have you been coming here?
We were here in 2011, and then this is our second year back, so we're so excited to get on the stage again.
It's a wonderful venue, isn't it?
It's amazing. Oh, my God. And I remember the first time that we came out to the States for 2 months, and this was the highlight of the whole tour coming to Milwaukee.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Where are you from?
I'm from Dundalk in County Louth, mm-hmm. So just on the border, halfway between Dublin and Belfast.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for being with us. Let's introduce another member of the band, and that's Tadhg Maher. Tadhg is keyboard player, also at the Irish World Academy at the University of Limerick, a recent graduate. He has established himself as a force in the world of traditional Irish music, a recent All-Ireland piano title win among the various awards for piano. He has toured all over the United States and Europe and provided, been on all kinds of stages, from stages in Ireland's National Concert Hall to Zambia and all over the world, really. Tadhg, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So you play, what did you bring with us? What instrument is that?
So this is a piano accordion.
A piano accordion.
Yeah, so I'm piano accordion and piano are my two instruments. So it's, and unfortunately the piano isn't quite as mobile as the accordion.
So. Right.
In the studio, the piano accordion came along.
Yeah, and this will be your second time at Irish Fest as well.
Yeah, it's the whole bunch of us collectively. So it's definitely exciting times.
Would you agree with Anya? This is one of your favorite. I don't want you to say this just because you're in Milwaukee, but would you agree that it's one of your favorite venues?
I mean, all of the bands on the festival circuit and that, everyone talks about Milwaukee's the big one, really. You know, it's world renowned, I guess. You know, even back in Ireland, people kind of are aware of Milwaukee Irish Fest. You know, far more so than maybe some of the others. But
why is it?
It's the biggest, I suppose, you know, that way. So yeah. it is the big one, and they've just kind of carved out this name for the fest, and it's just up there on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm. Playing a traditionally Irish instrument, and we'll hear more about this, is Colm Phelan. He is one of Ireland's leading young percussionists and an exceptional bodhrán player. He has been playing since childhood, has been a prominent contender in All-Ireland competition, also a graduate in Irish music and dance at the Irish World Academy of Music and Dance, has performed in many, many places. And tell us a little bit about the instrument that you're playing. It has a unique sound. We would say it's a drum, but it's not really a drum.
Well, yeah, I suppose you can call it a drum. But the bodhrán is a quite relatively new instrument in Irish music in terms of being playing with Irish music. And its kind of introduction to Irish music is really since the 1960s. So it's only about 50 years or so kind of in existence in a musical context. So my job in the band is to kind of provide the rhythm section and to really lay down the grooves and try to get the feet tapping and stamping, I suppose, and give a bit of lift to the group and bring a bit of fun and energy.
And you've been playing since you were a child?
Yeah, I've been playing, I won't give away my age now, but I've been playing 14 years, so I won't tell you what age exactly I started at, but I've been playing a long, long time, yeah. So, but it's a lot of fun, it's a great instrument kind of to be into, and I kind of play a bit of drums as well, so there's a good crossover between the full drum kit and the bodhrán as well.
Mm-hmm. And this is your second time to Milwaukee as well?
Well, it's actually my third. I came out in 2007 just as a visit, as a sightseeing, because I'd heard so much about the festival like everyone else, and I decided to take a trip out as a holiday.
Oh, nice.
Just to come to Milwaukee and to enjoy the festival, and I'm delighted to be back here again and to be part of the festival. It's absolutely amazing. So it is. It's top of the list, you know.
Yeah, top-notch festival, and you're teaching as well, right?
Yeah. I'm privileged to be asked to teach as part of the summer school that's been running here since Tuesday. So I've had classes in the intermediate and advanced bodhrán classes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then tomorrow morning I'm doing a master class in the bodhrán as well for a few students. So it's been a lot of fun as well, and great to meet a lot of different players as well and share ideas and rhythms and give a good old goat bashing, you know.
Conal O'Kane is also with us. He plays fiddle and he grew up in South Philadelphia, so we'll have to hear about his story from South Philadelphia to Limerick. An active member of the Irish music community, he learned guitar at the age of 17. But tell us the story, Conal, of how you got from South Philadelphia to Limerick, of all places.
What happened was after high school, I moved over to Galway, and I was living there. I was living there for a year just to hang out and play music, and I ended up having a great time. Like, I had intended on coming back to the States and doing a degree over here, but I ended up just having so much fun. I figured I would go down to Limerick and check out the course down there.
And you chose the fiddle because?
Well, I chose the fiddle just because I liked the instrument, and that was what I started out on. But I sort of took up guitar just for a bit of fun when I was about 17. And when I got to Limerick, I was in a class with Anya there, and it turned out there was a million really good fiddle players around, so it was a lot easier to get work.
Imagine that.
It was a lot easier to get work as a guitar player, so that's what I do mostly now.
Right. So will all of you stay together? You're all graduates now, right, from the university? So you're together as a group, and that's what you will do for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I guess kind of it's what keeping us employed full time at the moment. Like, we'd all have our own kind of side projects as well, but mostly we're putting our heads together now, putting some new material together for a new CD, hopefully early next year.
And oh, nice!
Just getting as many gigs in as possible. We're heading for home now on Monday, so we land Tuesday, and then we fly to France on Wednesday. So
we're doing a bit
around Europe now as well. So it's good to be busy. And then we're actually back to the States in October, November, doing a Caribbean cruise and a few dates around that.
Oh, that's a good
Florida,
that's a good assignment, huh?
Yeah, good to see really the alligators down there, you know.
Yeah, right.
We've heard a lot about them. So.
I'm sure. When I described your music as a combination of traditional Irish music and modern, what does that mean? How do you incorporate that in your sound?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a contemporary kind of a show because a lot of what we do is compositions that Tadhg and Anya have composed, and they've written their own music, and we incorporated that with some kind of old traditional tunes. So there's that kind of fine balance between old traditional tunes and then very contemporary modern sounds. And some of the tunes that the guys would have wrote have real modern rhythms in it and catchy kind of little parts in it. And I suppose the overall show is very fun and energetic, and even the way we perform it compared to some other Irish bands as a visual is very kind of contemporary in terms of what is being done in Ireland at the moment. A lot of us will stand for the show and we'll walk around the stage and there's a good kind of a show element that goes with it too as well. So do come down and check us out at the fairgrounds if anyone's out there, you know.
It seems to me, just from hearing you play, and I'll ask you to play something else in just a moment here before we go to the spoken part of Irish Fest as well, that it would be kind of exhausting to play this kind of music for a long period of time and to walk around the stage. Is it, or is it just really energizing?
Yeah, well, I suppose there has to be a bit of a buzz now. I'd really like to hand you over to Anya here because she is really the kind of jumping, dancing all around.
The dancing queen.
and which is impressive, like when you have to bring a fiddle and a bow and kind of keep them connected at all times. It's I don't know how she does it, but I guess, I don't know, there's an attribute because obviously we would also have a lot of kind of more emotive or kind of slower pieces and you know, we can kind of, I suppose we hope to bring the audience on a bit of that journey with us, so it's not kind of non-stop high energy that can kind of get a little draining maybe. It's good to kind of...
Yeah, you have to pace yourself for the whole weekend. Milwaukee would drain it out of you because there's a lot of great music then at night. Mm-hmm. After we play, then we sometimes hang out with other musicians and share tunes and
I've heard that.
And catch up, so you have to pace yourself all right, but come down and you'll enjoy the show anyway. That's a guarantee, hopefully.
Connell was talking about going to the guitar because there are so many fiddle players in Ireland. Why are there so many fiddle players in Ireland, Anya?
I don't know. It's just, it's a really popular instrument. There's so many good fiddle teachers around, I suppose, from the older generations. So when I was in primary school, everybody had to learn the tin whistle. And if you were any way good in the tin whistle, you were handed a fiddle. So,
really?
Yeah, you had
that's
no choice, really. So.
Is it hard to play? I would think it's hard to play.
After the screeching and sounding like you're killing a cat for the first year, it gets pretty tolerable after that, I'd say.
Sounding
just
like
about,
you're
just
killing
about.
A cat. I've never heard that before. There's nothing worse than hearing that instrument played badly, though,
yeah,
is there? It's not good.
It's pretty good now whenever it's played right, I think.
Yeah. Play a little something for us. Tell me what it is, and then we will be introducing another guest who's going to be part of the literary quarter at Ireland. There's a literary corner, and Karen McCarthy will be joining us from the NPR studios in New York. She's written a fascinating book, The Other Irish, The Scots-Irish Rascals Who Made America. She's from Ireland, and she's a documentary filmmaker and author and has some incredible stories to tell about how she got this story of the other Irish. So we'll be meeting her momentarily. Who wants to introduce whatever we're going to hear?
Well, so what we're going to play is a set that we call Lady's Choice. So it starts off with a a Charlie Lennon tune called Lady's Choice, and then we go into a reel that my old teacher composed, so it's called Trina's Reel, and then we finish up with one of Jimmy Keane's reels called The Charleston, and he'll be playing actually at the Irish Fest as well, so yes. Be a nerve-wracking time for me playing in front of him, but anyway.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Very nice. Thank you. That was just wonderful. Members of the group, and you can hear them at Irish Fest Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Quicha, Colm Phelan on Bodron, Tig Marr on the keyboard, on piano, on what he is, a combination of an accordion and a piano that he's playing for us now. Also, Anya Magrini, who is a vocalist and plays a marvelous fiddle, and also playing Bodron, Colm Phelan, who is a leading young percussionist. Did I get everybody in the group here? And Conal O'Kane, also joining us, who started on fiddle but is playing guitar with this group. We're going to welcome phone calls for them, and we're also going to go to the literary quarter, which is a big part of Irish Fest. It's the wonderful music, but also you can discover your roots, and there are poets, and there are people who have written histories. Karen McCarthy will be joining us, author of The Other Side, The Scots-Irish Rascals Who Made America. She is from Ireland. She's based in New York now, and she spent quite a bit of time in the South writing about some, as you can imagine from her title, rascals from Northern Ireland who made America. So all of that is coming up on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Irish Fest, this hour of the program, which opens actually this evening. There's a little bit of music tonight, but the big days are tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday on the Summerfest grounds. It's the 33rd annual Irish Fest, the biggest Irish music festival in the whole world. The other part I always go, well, first of all, I always go see the dogs first because I got an Irish Sweden Terrier, and I really love dogs. I'm there for like an hour meeting all the dogs who are there, and they're in parades, and you can talk to the owners and pet the dogs, and it's all good. There's also a literary corner to Irish Fest, and there are plays that are going on, and you can trace your roots. One of the people who will be there, and she's going to be there tomorrow, actually, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, is Karen McCarthy. And Karen has written a fascinating book about the Scots, Scot-Irish, the other Irish, the Scots-Irish rascals who made America. She's a documentary filmmaker. She is from Ireland, and she spent months in the South doing research for this book. From their ranks, Davy Crockett, Andrew Jackson, Mark Twain, William Faulkner, George Patton, and many others. And so she came to the South to find descendants of those proud, independent-minded, self-reliant people who set sail from Ulster centuries ago. Karen is joining us now from the NPR studios in New York City. And Karen, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks. It's nice to be here.
You had a wild time in the South, didn't you? I mean, you have stories that are hard to believe they're going on now.
Oh God, yeah. No, it was a brilliant time down there. I was off hunting with Davy Crockett, who's the fourth generation from Davy Crockett, who I swear was 7 feet tall. Although I wrote in my book he was 7 feet tall, and then he sent me a note saying he's actually only 6'5". But he anyway looks 7 feet in his hat. But I was off hunting with him and his buddies. I had been in Iraq for the Irish Times as a correspondent, so I had good military connections. So I went off down to a couple of the bases down there around the south, spent a bit of time with them again. And like if Iraq wasn't hairy enough, I showed up in Florida. And the first thing I was asked was, oh, do you want to jump out of a plane? And, you know, the thing I've learned about being embedded with the military is you never say no. So the next thing I knew, I was strapped to a soldier being chucked out of an airplane over Miami. So it just, the whole, it was months of this. I was up with snake handlers up in northern Tennessee, you know, where they, you know, these snake handlers, they're, they have the serpents where they take them out of the boxes and they hold them up and sort of dance around preaching with the snakes. Yeah.
You need a nice you need a nice quiet time in Milwaukee, Karen.
Yeah. I can tell you, Kathleen, I stay to the back of that church, that's for sure.
I would imagine. So tell me a little bit about this ethnic group. You write that this ethnic group, and I don't think we know very much about them, have greatly shaped American politics, religion, and culture, the most patriotic of all Americans, which is quite something. How did they get here, and how did they become all those things?
Well, the thing about the Scots-Irish, who they're called Ulster Scots now, largely in Northern Ireland, is that they actually came in the early 1700s, really, before there was an America. And so by the time America really became a nation, they were very active in fighting the Revolutionary War and actually fought in some very, very decisive battles. By the time the country was sort of formed, they were just calling themselves American, and they sort of just got blended into the fabric of America. So when the more well-known ethnic groups came later, either the Irish, the Italians, etc., they were coming sort of 100 years or so after the formation of America and kind of kept their hyphenation in their name. But the people who had arrived in America before the formation of the country didn't. So they've kind of... they know that they're the Scots-Irish, but outside their community, a lot of people don't realize who they are.
And where they settled is interesting. You think of the Irish settling in Boston and Chicago and other places, but huge populations in those cities. The Scots-Irish settled in Appalachia.
Largely,
why?
Well, what happened was when they arrived in Boston, they started arriving in 1717 or thereabouts. And when they arrived first, they came by, there were so many of them coming by the boatload that they overran Boston, basically. And at one point, one of the politicians there in Boston said, there's more Irish than people here. And they just really needed them out of the city. So the colonial governor, they actually wouldn't let them off the boats then for a while. There were so many. I think 200, they estimate about 200,000 of them came in the early 1700s or over the course of the 1700s. Mm. What happened then was there were quite a hardy bunch of people. So what happened then was the colonial governors in the Carolinas and in Virginia offered them, you know, packets of land if they would come down and settle down there, because they were under siege by the Indians, the Native Americans, and they really needed a buffer between them and the Native Americans. So they offered up the land to the Scots-Irish, who were just arriving off the boats and being sort of run out of Boston and the Northern Territories. Mm. So the Scots-Irish were quite happy to go down and fight a few Indians for the land. And that's really how they ended up tumbling down through Appalachia and into sort of out to Georgia, Tennessee, and then from there really on into Texas.
Mm. We've been, as you know, celebrating the music with the wonderful band Gwicha. They are really terrific. Do the Scots-Irish have a similar musical tradition?
Yes, very strongly, actually. The Scots-Irish fiddle sort of blended with the African drum in the South and really has given gave rise first to obviously its own traditional music, which became bluegrass music, and then country music, which is huge sellers. So the Cash family, the Carter Cash family, Ralph Stanley, who the Library of Congress has now designated an American legend, these are all very strongly Scots-Irish descendants, all people of that ethnicity.
And what about the huge numbers of people in the military? You talk about Stonewall Jackson, George Patton, Senator James Webb, who comes from this ethnic group as well. Mm-hmm. Why so many numbers in the military?
It's a really good question, isn't it? I think they just like a good fight, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. But, well, they never seem to back down from a fight, that's for sure. But they also seem to be very, very patriotic bunch of people. And like I say, because they came before the formation of the nation, they really considered themselves really the first Americans.
Oh.
And they were, as a result, very, very patriotic in defense of what was to them then the homeland, you know, which was the American nation. And so they have also, where they settled, there really was a fight every day. I'm sure you can imagine, you go down to the frontier, which is completely wild and unsettled. It's populated by Native Americans at that point, who are not happy to see them, of course. And it was a constant, constant battle for them every step of the way. So I feel like what I kind of came across was that that has just really now been sort of encoded into the bloodline in a way.
Mm-hmm. And we should go back. I don't know how long we have to go back here, but I'm wondering how these people came to Ulster in the first place. They came from Scotland. How did they get to Ulster?
Well, at the time, the late 1600s, mid to late 1600s, in the history of Britain and Ireland, the monarchs in Britain were trying to what's called settle Ireland. In other words, they were sending over English people to basically try to settle the land take over the land, essentially, in what were called plantations, the different plantations of English people in Ireland during that time. The only thing was that the English people that were coming over either were run off the land by the Irish who were there, or they really settled in, intermarried, became very much Irish themselves, much to the frustration of Queen Elizabeth at the time. So her successor, James, decided he'd send a hardier bunch. So he'd got the Lowland Scots and sent them to the province of Ulster in what's now Northern Ireland. And the Scots really dug in and sort of staked their claim and stayed there. So that's where they originated. There's a very, very, very famous siege called the Siege of Derry, which was where they basically locked themselves inside the walled city of Derry against the invading army of King James and won despite all the odds. And then that actual siege was sort of almost replicated then again in the Alamo. And oddly enough, there were Crockett's in the Siege of Derry.
Oh, really?
And then, as you know, there was Davy Crockett was in the Alamo as well. So, yeah, there was a great parallel between those two stories. It's quite interesting.
And who was the Davy Crockett descendant you spent time with? Was it his great-great-grandson or great-great-great-great-great?
Nephew.
His nephew.
Yeah, nephew. Yeah, and he actually looks really like him still. It's amazing.
It must have been quite something. Yeah. What about, I'm really interested in American presidents. There are a number of Scots-Irish presidents.
Yeah, God, it was like, I wanted to cry when I was writing that, chapter, because every time I opened a book, another one popped up, and I thought, oh God, I'm never going to finish this chapter. There's like 20-something of them. I thought I was going to be writing about Scots-Irish-American presidents for the rest of my life at one point.
So who were some of them, and who were the ones you found most compelling?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, there's the very, very famous ones. Whether you like them or hate them is an entirely different, love them or hate them is an entirely different thing. Obviously, probably the most famous first American president of Scots-Irish descent was Andrew Jackson, mm-hmm. The hero of New Orleans, as you know, who ran the British really out of the British second attempt to invade America, got rid of them in 1812, went on to be a president. And he obviously had a huge, huge impact on the formation of America, because he was responsible for for beating the banks, basically taking on what would now be considered the lobbyists in a way. He also moved all of the Native Americans west of the Mississippi, and what was very, very tragic, the Trail of Tears. So yes, for good and bad, he had a huge influence on America. I know that David Crockett at the time was very, very opposed to that. Sam Houston, who had grown up and spent an awful lot of his life with an Indian tribe in Texas, a Native American tribe in Texas, and was actually married to a Native American woman, helped resettle his tribe. So it was a very, very big and very tragic part of American history, but it certainly was very, very, very influential in how America came to evolve then after that. And then, I mean, another president who is Woodrow Wilson, of course, who mm-hmm. really was spearheaded the League of Nations, and, you know, he's an inspiring character and a very, very forward-thinking man. There's just like endless. And of course, the more modern you get, the more the bloodline is sort of diluted. So then you get to, say, Bill Clinton, who had some Scots-Irish heritage. You get to the Bush family, who have some Scots-Irish heritage. Harry Truman is another great American president who was really there at the catalyst for the civil rights movement, or hugely influential presidents there. I mean, some not so influential, but certainly those are giants in American history and American historical politics.
We're talking with Karen McCarthy. She'll stay with us. We're listening to music and hearing about the Scots-Irish and about Irish literature, because that's what Irish Fest really is all about. Now, in its 33rd year, which is really something, the largest Irish music festival in the world. If you've never been, I don't care if you're Irish or not, the music is fabulous. And there are dogs and, you know, music and dogs and literature and poetry. It really doesn't get any better than that. Our phone number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Because we're talking with Karen about time so long ago, we have members of the band Gwicha with us. Pick something, if you would, that is very, very traditional. And if you can, to somebody tell me the story of the importance of tradition and perhaps masters, be they in fiddle or bodhrán or some other Irish instrument that influences the music. Now, the past seems to me to be always present in some way, doesn't it, Anya?
Yeah,
wait, let me get your mic on. There we go. Okay.
No, it definitely is. I think we're going to try a song, which is actually a very traditional Irish song called Erin on the Rhine. And it tells the story about a soldier boy who goes off to war. And he promises that this would be the last time he'd leave for home, but he actually dies out there. Mm. So it's a song that we got from Cathal McConnell. He used to be a flute player and singer with Boys of the Loch, a really famous traditional band. And like, we'd get so much influence from those type of people who are so rooted in the tradition and yet are still so popular today, you know, even by young people and everybody else. So mm-hmm. This is Erin on the Rhine. So stood on the village street and bid his love adieu. It's gone on knapsack on his back, his company to renew. With tears he kissed her once again and turned away his head. He could but whisper in his pain, and this is what he said: "Love, dear, love me true, the only, only mine. When the war is o'er, we'll part no more on Erin on the Rhine." As they marched along through the village streets, the banners floated gay, and the children cheered the trembling feet that went to the war away. But one among them turned around once more to look again. And although his lips gave out no sound, his heart sighed this refrain: "Love, dear, love me true, the only, only mine. When the war is o'er, we'll part no more on Erin on the Rhine." On the battlefield, the pale cold moon was shining on his last discerning flight. I'll meet that dying soldier lay his comrades close at hand, and he said, "When I am dying here, and you in your native land, will you say this war is o'er, we'll part no more on Erin on the Rhine? Will you say to my love be true, the only, only mine? For my life is o'er, we'll meet no more on Erin on the Rhine."
Oh, that is haunting, beautiful. Thank you for singing for us. Kind of a beautiful guitar too. Yeah, nice. We'll welcome phone calls. We'll take them. That band is Gwicha. You'll want to be sure and hear them there at Irish Fest on Friday, 7 o'clock, Miller Light Stage. Same place Saturday, only at 3:15. And Sunday at 5:45. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we welcome phone calls now. We have members of the band Gwicha in our studios in Milwaukee, and we have Karen McCarthy, author of The Other Irish, The Scots-Irish Rascals Who Made America. She's also a documentary filmmaker. She's a newspaper reporter, has been in war zones and with wild animals and spirited people all over the world. Let's go to some phone calls for all our guests. Dennis in Wausau is our first caller this hour. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to share, first of all, my grandfather called us Orange Irish, And some of us ended up here in Wisconsin. My group came out of Virginia after the Revolution and to Ohio, and after the Civil War into northern Wisconsin. So there's a few of us up here, too.
Mm-hmm. Karen?
Yeah, there are actually, I also found a few up in Maine as well. I think probably the most famous one up there is Stephen King. But oh. a few did make their way back north, that's for sure.
Hmm. And would it be fair to say that they would have called themselves the Orange Irish when they arrived?
Well, I never came across anyone in the South calling themselves the Orange Irish. So it's actually the first time I've heard it. So that's a new thing I've learned today.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Mm. Politically, this group was pretty conservative, right? Can you tell me why?
Well, partly because when they're out on the frontier, they were really largely beyond the rule of government and the law. And so as a result, they really were became very, very independent. They took care of their own governing, their own legal system. They took care of, fending for themselves, fighting their own battles, taking care of their own families, growing their own food, building their own schools. So they became very, very independent, and as a result, still to this day, don't appreciate government interference or taxation or anything like that. So they really just prefer to be a small government and to be left well alone.
Hmm. And what about the clashes, if there are any? Maybe there's a lot of interaction between the Scots-Irish and Irish Catholics?
Well, I don't know that about states, because the two ethnicities really settled in very, very different areas.
Yes.
You find, as you mentioned earlier, the Irish came a century or so later than the Scots-Irish and settled really largely around Boston, New York, New England, Chicago, all that area, whereas the Scots-Irish really had really pushed out into the wilderness on the frontier all the way out to Texas. So there, you don't find that much overlap between them, partly because of just the way history played out, the different state that America was in, say, in the 1700s to the mid-1800s. So I didn't come across a lot of interaction or integration, really. I actually found there was more integration between the Germans and the Scots-Irish than anything else, because they were the two peoples that really settled the South.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Thanks, Dennis, for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about Irish Fest now in its 33rd year. If you have comments about the Scots-Irish or the music you've been listening to or your experiences at Irish Fest, too, I know many people are looking forward to a grand run again this year, and it looks as though the weather is going to be spectacularly good. Dan and Toma. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Kathleen. First, I'd like to compliment your guest on her voice. She's beautiful. I wanted to share, I'm a Scotch-Irish person from North Carolina originally.
Mm.
And she was talking about how the Scotch-Irish got to this country. They primarily came in through Pennsylvania. The Quakers there could not fight the Indians, and they had, around the time of the French and Indian War, they had a state policy of basically recruiting Scotch-Irish to come to Pennsylvania and promising them free land on the outskirts of the Quaker settlements to fend off the Indians.
Hmm.
And because there was a large Quaker population down in North Carolina, a lot of them subsequently migrated south and into the mountains. And she's absolutely right about the taxation issue and the conservatism. It was the Scotch-Irish that sort of led the Whiskey Rebellion back right after the nation became independent, because they brought their skills at making good whiskey to this country and didn't like sharing the profits.
Right. Yeah, and you write about that in the book, don't you, about the moonshiners?
I did. They still don't like paying taxes on their whiskey. I know Junior Johnson well, who was one of the greatest renegades of the old moonshine NASCAR fame. And as you guessed, or as you recall, will know, when they came first, they were making moonshine in the Appalachians and weren't paying any taxes on it. So when the revenuers, as they called them, came knocking, they would just hide the whiskey, put it in cars, run it down through the mountains. And because they were always running through these little tiny twisty roads through the Appalachians, they ended up having to, and trying to outrun the police, they would jerry-rig or soup up their cars to, you know, to be able to get ahead of the police. And that eventually became a sort of a Sunday afternoon bragging rights thing, where the moonshiners would brag about who had the fastest car, and they would get to race thing around old abandoned horse tracks. And that event, that gave rise to NASCAR, which is the biggest spectator sport in America now. I actually drove up and down Whiskey Highway in Georgia with some old moonshiners in one of those old 1937 Fords, which was an experience. I've no idea how they got through those roads with a carload of whiskey in it, you know, without going into a ditch. And
Karen,
very often they did.
You just need to write a book. This is my life. You've had some incredible experiences, it sounds like, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, I think researching the book was a book as well.
Yeah. An email from Phil. I was on Dingle a few years ago listening to traditional Irish music in a pub. I looked around and realized every person in the front of the pub was an American, and most were sipping Guinness. In the back of the pub, in another room, were lots of Irish 20-somethings listening to American hip-hop and sipping Coors Light from Budweiser. Irish Fest is amazing. I'll be there all weekend. What do you think of that comment? Is that true, members of this group?
Seems just about spot on. Yeah, yeah.
Do you like hip-hop? What you do is quite different than hip-hop.
Yeah, well, I like, to be honest, I think we're fans of music, you know, generally. Like, I think if anyone was in the tour van with us, like, I think you'd be pretty, I don't know, taken aback by the variety of music, like, all the way from... I'm trying to think what we were listening to. Louis Armstrong, Eminem,
nice.
Traditional Irish, good. Everything, like, you know. So it's kind of, I'm hoping the better parts of all of that feed into our music.
Yeah. Connell, what do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. That's pretty much exactly right. You know, I don't know. I guess I'm somewhere in between there.
And Anya, what about you?
Yeah, I'd be a big fan of most things rock, especially. I love a good bit of rock music.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. So thanks for the email, and let's, Dan, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Bob next in Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I'm driving in a car. I hope this is coming across okay.
I hope you're being careful, sir.
Yeah, my family were Crees and Kellys, and they were part of the people that came from Scotland to Ireland, and I was raised in a house that had a lot of mementos. We had a spinning wheel that my grandmother tried to keep me away from the 1500s.
Ooh.
That came from Scotland to Ireland to America, and it's now in the museum at Lewisburg, West Virginia. In fact, they were the people that established the first Presbyterian church west of the Allegheny Mountains in West Virginia in the 1700s. And my grandparents were all born in the 1870s and 80s. So they knew some of those people from the 1700s. And one of the things that we had a family history, and I wish I had it, because my grandmother said they brought books with them from Ireland when they came and moved into the hills, but the family lost the ability to read.
Oh.
And she said when she was a young girl, those old people would take a book, tear out a page, light their pipe with it, and one by one, page by page,
oh, no.
Those
oh,
old
no.
women smoking their corn cob
pipe. Oh, no.
The family is...
That's such a sad story. You have to make sure you come and visit Karen. She'll be interested in talking to you, and I'll bet you'll get a lot of people with you, Karen. Karen, we're almost out of time. We'll look forward to seeing you. You're just there tomorrow, right?
No, I'm there.
Oh, you're not.
I'm there for the weekend.
Oh,
yeah,
so you'll
I'm
be
at the
right.
Literary Corner tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday.
Good. I just had tomorrow, yeah. So you're going to be there all 3 days.
Yeah, I think Saturday at 6, I think, and then Sunday at noon, I believe.
Sunday at noon. All right, well, I'll drop by and say hi, and thank you
nice
so much.
You.
Thank you. And if we could, we'll give you, we got about 2 minutes. Give us a tune, hey, and tell us what it is.
And thank you very, very much. Happy Irish Fest, everybody. Gwiche is with us in studio in Milwaukee. We do an Irish Fest show every year. It's at the lakefront, and it's a wonderful time. So we hope to see you there. And we'll hear some music from Gwiche.
Well, we're going to play a set that we call Dows Number 10, and it's a newly composed tune into an old-time tune. So we'll see how far we get along anyway. So
thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley. Have a good weekend.